You're listening to Blind Shovel, an arts and music podcast. This episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with my friend Christopher Davison, father, fine artist, and teacher. Hope you enjoy.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So you're not in New York anymore, is that right?
That's right. I am in San Francisco. For my, we moved out here because of my wife's job, her fellowship at the hospital.
Ah. Yeah. When did you move?
It was last summer. So it was fairly recent.
So how long did you end up in New York?
We moved there for her residency. So we were there 2015 to when we left last year, 2022. So yeah, 7 years. 7 years. Yeah.
And she's a medical professional.
Yeah, she's a surgery fellow here at the hospital.
So yeah. Where are you actually like rooted? Or is that it's not a thing?
Well, I guess now we're kind of I think we're enjoying the West Coast situation, and we're gonna kind of ride it out here. My wife has family out here, and I think we were looking to get outside of I think we were looking to leave New York one way or another. I think so. It was kind of this was like leaving and going very far from New York, but it feels like I made the mistake of telling someone here who lives here. I said something like, we were just looking to get out of the city. And they were like, don't you consider San Francisco a city? And I was like, yeah, but I mean, it's just not the same scale. So it feels much more, it feels a lot like Philly in a weird, like surprising way to me here. Like some of the neighborhoods are like Philly is to me, like the scale of Philly feels right. Like mm-hmm. for me as a person, but it's a city that's not so big that you couldn't bike across it in a somewhat reasonable amount of time or something. And it's not dissimilar to it here, other than they have like, you know, very different trees and they have some pretty intense hills.
Yeah. I know SF pretty well.
Okay.
I lived in Oakland for like 5 years I completely understand the description.
Yeah. So yeah, New York, we never felt like New Yorker. Like I had some friends who are like, you know, diehard New Yorker kind of people. And I never quite felt that. I do feel like a sweet spot very much for Philly still. And this weird, like, unexpected Philly aspect of some parts of San Francisco that have made me feel like it feels like familiar in a weird way to me that I don't know. Yeah. And there's not so many artists here. So it's not like, I think you can actually have like a community of artists here that you can like get to know because there aren't that many here in the same way that like comparing New York to Philadelphia, like there's like so many artists in New York, so many galleries, so many, you know, and in Philly, there's a handful of galleries and there's, you know, a lot of artists, but still like you can like have a community there of artists too. Not that you couldn't have that in New York, but we lived, you know, as you know, like north, like real far north in Manhattan. So I think we just weren't really in the art zone. Like we weren't in Brooklyn. We weren't in any of the neighborhoods that were really
like yeah.
where you would have that kind of community of artists. So
it's funny you say that, because I remember before I moved out to Oakland, I read a Wikipedia page saying that it had the highest concentration of artists per capita, but I came to realize that that was one, that's just one what you say on the census, I think, but also a lot of Burning Man artists, which is like a whole different world.
Yeah,
No disrespect, because there's some good welding, but
yeah, I think there's that, you know, other people have their cup of tea is, you know, live painting to IDM and, you know, whatever else is, you know, but, you know, hey, you know,
live painting
live painting, you know, is different from player painting, but also
I know it's very different. So where are you actually from?
I am, I was born in Ohio, but I grew up in Florida. And as soon as I could get out of Florida, I did.
No, so you're a real freak.
A real what?
Freak.
That's right.
That's a great, that's a good mixture. Ohio to Florida?
Ohio to Florida, and then left after college. And that's when I ended up in Philly. I did like a year abroad in Rome for grad school. So I did like a year for Temple or Tyler School of Art. I did my first year in Rome and then back in Philly. And then we were in Philly for quite a while. So we being, I'm looping my wife into this, even though she was not in the picture at the beginning of my first few years in Philly. But
Did you teach at UArts? I don't remember.
I did. Yeah.
Right. We talked about that. And now you have a child.
Yeah. I was thinking of the show at Harpy was I had to look up the specific date. I think it was May of 2019. And that was like right before my daughter was born. So basically the time between that show and now is the age of my daughter. There's a human
how's
being.
That?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's great. Yeah. I was like telling someone the other day about like, I feel like before having kids, like I would hear someone say something like, oh, well, if you ever decide to have a family or a child or, you know, and they like talk about it in this normal way, like maybe, you know, maybe you'll have a child one day, or I don't know who this person is doing this voice.
Sure.
It's just like, you know, I feel like it was often said in a fairly kind of like normal tone of voice, but like having a kid is like, it's just insane. It's like totally insane. It's like anyone who ever should have talked to me previously should have been like, are you ready for how crazy this is going to be? It's really wild. It's for me, it's my wife's schedule is so intense that she has to be at the hospital at like 6 a.m. basically. So she's at the hospital before my kid's up. So I do all the mornings, and then she comes home. My wife comes home quite late usually. So it's a lot of me doing it. So the insanity part is more like doing it more like solo all the time. But she's in school 5 days a week, her preschool. So that frees up some time and allows her to, you know, become a normal social human being and all that stuff. But yeah, the first couple of years in particular are just like insanity. So yeah, we're just getting to a point now where she's like, I'm going to do it myself, you know, and she'll like put her clothes on like all wrong, but she'll do it herself. It's giving me a sense that like, oh, she'll eventually do everything herself. Like I don't have to help her constantly with everything. Like she's actually learning and growing into a normal human being. So
right, and then she'll do things you don't want her to do,
right.
And that'll be a different set of problems. But
right.
do you think? Right. You know, I think it's just interesting when artists have kids, but also I do think it speaks to the kind of calcification and predictability of life that having children, which is such a fundamental aspect of life, feels like a bizarro world where I'm pretty sure in the past it was just, you know, part and parcel of a chaotic world, and it wasn't like a huge interruption in the serenity of the programming, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, I only read one book before my daughter was born about like parenting or, you know, Anyways, but the only thing I got from the book was like kind of a waste of time, but the only thing I got from it, two things I got from it, but the one pertinent to this is, it talked about only, you know, only 100 years ago, families lived together more, you know, it wasn't like people were just like taking off across the country and like scattering and moving all over the place. Like families did live closer by. So the idea of having kids and having family look after them was like way more normal than it is now when you have kids and you're just kind of like on your own to like figure it out. And, yeah, you have like five brothers, right? Yeah. I remember you have a bunch of siblings.
We are five boys. So
wow. Look at that. Five.
Yeah. I have four brothers and they all live in New Jersey within a 20-minute radius. So when they've had kids, you know, they do have some of that familial support, but you're right. It's what having kids today means versus having kids in the past. And it's certainly very, very different. So, that atomization is is obviously the problem of our time. In every way, I feel that about artists. I feel that artists, you know, their utility in society is so low because of this problem. I just don't think that's where the mental issues come into play a lot. They're just not necessary in the same way they used to be. And they're kind of on these islands of self-expression that don't, you know, at best get their entertainment at best, you know, successfully become entertainers or unsuccessfully fail, you know, and, become teachers. No, I'm kidding.
Damn.
That's my segue into you're a teacher, right?
I was I would like to get back to teaching.
Here your Instagram, you know, bio is very straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You're a painter and a teacher.
I'm unaffiliated with any school right now. Yeah, that's a kind of, I wrote that as a wish fulfillment of getting back to proper, having some kind of teaching, regular teaching setup. So, yeah. So I was teaching up until my daughter was born, and then I was still teaching in Philly and commuting from New York. And that kind of became no longer viable after my daughter was born. The idea of like somehow taking care of being the main like caretaker for her and then like taking these crazy like trips down to Philly for teaching. So that kind of stopped. And then I was just kind of doing some part-time work at some galleries in New York, just here and there. And moving out here, I'm kind of like one of those did that just make a noise in the background?
No.
No. Okay. Jump in the parachute appears kind of people, like in terms of like planning for things. And we kind of moved out here, which was the jump. And I was offered, a drawing class at CCA and I passed it up because I was, I took a full-time like art handling job because I needed something. It's so, rent here is so expensive. And it kind of, I think made my wife feel more comfortable about how we were going to work our budget out and stuff like that. But I've been kicking myself ever since I turned that class, class down. So I'm still in touch with the program director and I'd like to hopefully that wheel will swing back around again in the fall. But, yeah, I think I'm starting the year in this kind of one position. I would like to end the year in like something that feels more like right for me. I don't know where between now and the end of the year that change is going to happen. Maybe later this spring, maybe this summer. You know, I landed here with something and I'm kind of trying to figure out what's the next right step for me.
Well, you're fairly extroverted in the artistic sense, right? Like you like talking about it and bouncing ideas and and teaching, et cetera. You don't like just, you're not one to hole up in a room and just paint for months.
Well, right? I do that too, but.
But does it make you happy?
Well, you know what I did was I had, I'm probably going to be teaching some classes over the summer, and in preparation for kind of like getting dusting off my teaching, chops. I started recording some of these videos that I was posting on Instagram of just like teaching, you know, basic things I taught before, and recording those. And it felt, you know, they're not for anyone in particular. They're not like, they're more for just for me, but I got really good feedback on them. And it just, it felt really good to do them because I like teaching. So it reminded me how it feels. You know, there's lots of issues with teaching, like the adjunct racket and the cost of student loans and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of employment that I could have, I feel like when I teach, I'm actually helping people get better at something and, you know, giving them a good listening ear and like trying to really understand where they're coming from and like give them very like thoughtful feedback. Like it feels good to do that. And it feels a lot better to do that than any other like job I've had. So that's the, you know, my ideal scenario is being a more, you know, having more regular sales from my art and then also having some like part-time teaching. That would be like my ideal situation.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And do you imagine that you'll have more children?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That's a personal question. You don't have to answer it.
Let me go into detail for you. We might. Yeah, we might. And, you know, I think one of the things, if you do have other kids, one of the things I've heard is, you know, hopefully if the kids are cooperative or whatever, the older one can help the younger one and kind of, you know, help them put their shoes on. You know, they could kind of like take on some of that burden that otherwise I was doing. So I'd like to think if we have another one. I also now know what it involves. So I feel like we have some friends in New York who had two kids, and you know, you have your first kid and you're like every little thing that they, you know, put in their mouth or like they're coughing too hard, you're like freaking out. Everything, you're worried about everything. And then you have a second kid and you're like, they're fine. They're fine. Like you just, you're like, oh, they put something in their mouth, they're probably fine. Like you just, you're just like so exhausted from the first kid that you're like, yeah, it's okay. They're
imagine having five.
Oh my God. Yeah. My grandma had 12.
Yeah. Just a different time.
Like, how do you do that? Yeah. I mean, you could never have 12 kids and pay for childcare. Like,
you'd have to be like Elon Musk has 10 children, right? So you need about $1 billion.
Right. I think. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
Were you,
once you start making them, you just like, if you're going for 12, you might as well just go for 12.
For 12. Oh, yeah. Did you think you would have children?
I kind of always felt like maybe if it happened, it happened. But I think my wife was more kind of more invested in making sure that we kind of went down that path. And you know, it kind of like made me feel like, you know, well, it's a huge unknown. It's a huge variable coming up in your life. And there's something kind of exciting and scary, and I don't know, it feels like kind of sometimes this, you know, taking the scary path is like the good path to take, because there's something in that scary unknown quality about it that you grow from or are challenged by in some new way. It's hard to like this week, I have the whole week off and she's in school, and it just feels so weird to me to like not have my normal responsibilities with my daughter. So I'm just kind of like hanging out. It's like how it was before she was born or something. It's like very, it's like I'm back on that side or something. But yeah, it's a, it's a, yeah.
Does it, thing. Of course. Well, it is life itself. So
yeah,
not surprising that it would change it. But does it scare you in terms of identity, in terms of like the time it takes to be an artist? Have you found ways to use that compressed time more potently?
Yeah, so I've been you know, I had a full-time job a couple times in my life, like closer to my early 20s, late teens and early 20s. And then ever after that, it was like, you know, freelance work or teaching, you know, part-time teaching and that kind of thing. And so I haven't had this thing about taking this job. Part of it was like, well, I haven't had this, you know, set up in a while. Like, I wonder how I'll be with it. And it's, I feel like there should be a 4-day work week, not a 5-day work week. It's too much. But I've been, so here's my new schedule is that I go to bed after I put my daughter to sleep. So she goes to bed at like 8:30, sometimes 9. I go to bed like instantly. I just pass out. But then I get up at like 3:30, and I've like trained myself to not have an alarm clock get me up. I just wake up at 3:30, and then I work from 3:30 to 7 when she wakes up. And I just like, it's like quiet early morning art time. And it's for, yeah, like 2 to 2.5 hours or something, somewhere around that. I feel like I've been like way more consistent and focused, and, you know, cause I, if I squander that time, it's just sure. Like, I'm out of luck for that day. And I'm kind of like, okay, if I'm tired at work, because I'm just like, oh, maybe I'll get an extra coffee or something like that. I was trying to do it where I would work during the day and then try to do a late night kind of thing, but that's kind of like, wasn't working. So now I just switched it up and I do like my art first and then after it.
It's inspiring. That's also the hour of the wolf.
What do you know about that?
I'm reading this period from 3 to 5, supposedly when the most deaths and births occur. This is like I thought it was 4 a.m. exactly, because I had to do some art project where you had to make a drawing at 4 a.m. And it was referencing the hour of the wolf. But I feel like you could mine that idea. Yeah, I like that.
You're the wolf.
Yeah. Check it out. And that's when you're working. And that's a very mysterious time where people seem to be, you're in like a liminal space. You don't know if people they're like awake. No, it feels like everyone is in the dream world almost at 3:34. Or that, because all the party animals have went away, but all the other people haven't woken up yet. Right. I think that's a cool time to make work.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's just like a couple birds outside doing their thing. And then, it's just like very quiet. And like San Francisco is very quiet in general compared to the Northeast. There's like no sirens here somehow.
They got rid of them.
So it's I don't, maybe they don't even have ambulances here. I don't know. But there's very few sirens. And so it's especially at that hour, the hour of the wolf, it is especially quiet. And,
Well, you like that mysterious space. You like mysticism.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
What does that even mean, actually?
I gave my daughter a beanie this morning because we have a giant trunk of beanies from my wife's childhood that she has like 1,000 beanies. And when my daughter does something really good, we give her a beanie. And I gave her, she selected a beanie this morning whose name, because I didn't know anything about beanies, but they all have individual names. The name of the beanie was Mystic. She selected Mystic.
Oh, we're talking about beanie babies.
Was beanie right? babies. Yeah, beanie babies.
I thought you were just giving her hats.
No. Strange. Right. Yeah, she. I give her a little beanie and a little.
Well, I think you wear beanies, technically.
I do. Yeah. I give her a little drug rug, you know, to wear when she does something really good.
It's an SF baby. Were you raised religious in Ohio?
My parents split up when I was young, but my dad is like to this day, like very like diehard Catholic, you know, like goes to the Right to Life March every year and like, all that stuff. So he's very, kind of old school Catholic, and that whole side of my family kind of largely is.
Well, the reason I ask is I think being raised religious can often lead to this this weird state of like you don't really want to associate with what you were raised or with your parents because you want to break away, but simultaneously you can't break away, and so you end up in these little holes of like Alan Watts and Zen and like you don't actually understand them, but they sound nice and like they seem to fill some void like in a kind of not really sufficient way. This is my experience. I'm just talking like it's a general experience, but I'm also, you know, I see that you have on your website certain people listed and I'm sure there's some like, all right, so Campbell, Joseph Campbell, like this kind of this fascination with myth, because ultimately you're raised in the middle of one. But then you like aestheticize it or something to get away from it, to disassociate from it. And then I think you end up coming back to it, especially when you make visual art. I feel it's just something about it. And then I don't know, more and more I'm just Christian again, in a different way than I was when I was little. But for me, it's the realization that, whatever that middle space was where I left it and then had to keep exploring, it just didn't work. It's almost like I had no right to the symbols that I could play with them and mutate them and draw them and because they're aesthetically pleasing. Because admittedly, occult imagery is far more interesting to me. But then at the end of the day, like it felt empty for me. That was a ramble, but did you get anything out of that?
Sorry, you cut out there. No, did you? But you're saying the kind of leaving the more orthodox Christian stuff for the more occult, esoteric, or Eastern kind of stuff, and then finding that it was kind of wasn't resonating with you on a deeper level than just like an aesthetic level, maybe that you kind of have come back to more of kind of your kind of childhood kind of
symbols. It's like a weird humility where I actively question the one's ability to engage with anything that they haven't been like marinated in since they were a child. And that's where my gratitude comes in. The gratitude of being marinated in something other than just like whatever the American culture was at the time of my birth. And being allowed to react to something strong, you know, upside and downside to that. But it's a very, well, I don't know how progressive of an idea it is for me to say, but I just think like the notion that I would ever come to understand Buddhism via reading books in America is slightly absurd. And only ends up with you at the aesthetic level where you're like, well, this looks cool. I could dress like this or say these things. And it sounds really intriguing, but I don't know. What's your experience with it?
Well, I feel like I've never gone as far as, you know, people that end up doing some kind of, retreat, you know, like silent sure. meditation retreat or doing any kind of like, I don't know. I feel like you would either have to go like, I feel like I've always kept it at a like safe, pleasant distance or something like that. Whereas I think if you were to go full Buddhist, you just have to go full Buddhist and you'd have mm-hmm. to really steep, you said marinate. Yeah, you'd really have to marinate yourself in it for quite a while. And I do feel like whatever, better or worse, it's like whatever you are kind of raised or born into in some way, I think that will always just, you know, have a kind of more intensely psychological kind of impact on you, because in the same way that if there was, you know, some kind of trauma when you're a child or something like that, that'll have, you know, a very profound like resonance or impact on you later in life, or could. I think it's that, you know, all of that stuff from childhood just has, it just like gets its claws in you. And so
makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I like claws.
Claws. Yeah. But
you know, I talk about it cause like both of us use symbols a lot in our imagery and Neve and I have talked about it quite a bit. It's like people are interested in, I don't know if you would call them symbolists or imagists, but uh-huh. just like they're, is a trap at play. Well, it's almost like you're summoning things you don't understand. And yeah. if you give art its respect that it's due, mm-hmm. then in some ways you have to then be like hyper aware of what you're playing with, that it's not mm-hmm. just like a, oh, that looks cool, but that you might actually be evoking something mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. spiritually.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think two, you know, the two things we talked about so far are two things that I don't hear talked about very often in the art world, which is like having kids and also like spirituality is, you know, maybe danced around sometimes or, but I feel like it's, they're two subjects that are, maybe not dealt with enough. And I like that they're the two things we've talked about.
It's really before. Like some of my main focus, because it needs to be talked about. Like there should be a book, and I know that a book about parenting isn't sufficient for the experience, but I think I had a teacher at UR. It's called Daniel Gerwin, and he writes about this a lot. He has two kids.
Oh,
and
I know him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and his focus is kind of like, there's almost like an active disincentivizing of having kids. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's interested in, if I understand correctly, like programs that are more willing to, you know, whether it's residencies or MFA programs that are like more actively accepting of that situation.
And right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think, you know, I am interested in like the myths of being an artist, and then the negative implications of like the, and I am a rugged individualist. I enjoy mm-hmm. the idea, but I know that there's downside, and that has to be balanced with a kind of social component or familial component.
Yeah.
And yeah. it's very bizarre that it's not talked about, because it's the generative act of life. You know, it's what makes, mm-hmm. it's what made me, made you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's what art, you know, I've always wondered if like I could get by on just making art and not having a child because it was some sublimation of the act. Mm. Mm-hmm. I've come to realize that's some convenient thinking. I think I think that is a falsehood, that nothing mm-hmm. can supplant having
mm-hmm.
a child. You know what? Or even having the responsibility of that mm-hmm. depth for another person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And yeah. then respect yeah. to spirituality. I think that might be, I don't know, dude. I haven't been in an art school in like 10 years, but I think there is consciousness that is recognizing how empty the world is mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and where it's going. And I think actually AI is going to force this issue a lot, because mm. it's going to strip us superficially mm-hmm. of everything that, like, especially artists specifically, mm-hmm. of their entertainment value in some ways, mm-hmm. I think, because mm-hmm. it'll be able to entertain the novel aspect,
right?
Like,
right,
you know, I'm looking at these beautiful things. It's like Star Wars as a 90s anime, and it's just like so right. convincing and beautiful, right. and my mind can go there. But like, the question is, one, it's it has no originality of its own. It only pulls from what's already been created by from individuals who we can argue where those ideas come from. It's kind of a weird idea, but like, it isn't clear where ideas come from, but it's clear where AI gets its ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's from people who had, you know, ideas right. that I would consider right. spiritual.
Right.
And I do recall talking to you about this. You know, it's one of the things we connect on. And we also like that clarity of mythological imagery, I think, but kind of tweaking it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I, you know, there's something about the creative act that when I'm really, you know, in that zone and I'm working, I will often have little statements occur to me, or a little bit of some kind of phrase or statement of some kind. And it's almost always of a very spiritual nature. It's not every time that I'm working, but it kind of comes and goes in waves. And, but it almost always happens just when I'm something about conjuring up these images or stirring up whatever pot that is where those images reside or something. And there'll be these like phrases, and they're always like very spiritual. And they're always about a connection between the creative act and, you know, the kind of that there is a kind of connection there between, some kind of spiritual level of existence and the creative act. And there's something there. I asked my grandmother on my dad's side, on the Catholic side, because they always had this like amazing basement in their house that was bright yellow floor, like bright, shiny yellow enamel floor paint. And it was like an art gallery. They had paintings and drawings, and all the kids in their family would make art. And they had this whole, like gallery of all their art they had made. My grandma used to make, she used to almost do like assemblage kind of things, like cut out photos, like put a wallpaper behind them, like put them in a frame, then like wallpaper the frame, you know, just like weird mashups that I think as like, you know, a 5-year-old seeing them, it was like visually very, I think she's the first person to have like a memory of her drawing with me. Like she would draw and tell a story, and the story would be a line, but then the line would turn into an animal, like, you know, some things like that.
That's wild.
Yeah, she would tell a story. I have her on video doing it. Like she would tell a story about this guy walking, he like fell over a log, and, you know, so then that creates like a curve, and then he went up here and picked some berries and came back down or whatever. And it you know, in the end, like as a 5-year-old, you don't see it coming, but it's like obvious as an adult watching this, like, oh, this person's about to draw a pig or about to draw a horse or something, you know. But she would like finish it off really quickly with like a flourish that instantly, when the story was over, this like animal would appear on the paper. But I'm mentioning her because I asked her one time, like, because she was so religious and there was so much art in their basement from all of their kids that they seem to encourage to make art. Like if there was a connection there between like the creative act and God's first, you know, the Christian God's first, you know, God created light, you know, creating being the first act. Was there some connection there between creativity and creating in a more religious sense? And to my disappointment, she said no. So, yeah, I was like, this like that. So obvious. So
I like
obvious.
That. I like that long story, like, for just no.
No.
No, what I take from that story is the beauty of that, having that gallery. That sounds really interesting. I will say this, that there's a move made at some point in history to suggest that art and, let me put it this way, that artists are gods and that they're the highest thing, culturally speaking. And I think, actually, I think it aligns with a more secularized view. But I think people who are really, really religious don't fuck with that view at all. And they're like, no, 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 these are completely different, like, realms, like prayer and the hierarchy of the church, and God is God. And then there's, and then there's art. And I used to traffic in that kind of conflation where, like, I collapsed them, you know, it's like, like, art making is prayer, or art making is meditation. I think that's again, like, a convenient move, because I think they're different. And, I don't know exactly why. Like, I could, you know, I could understand that you get in the zone when you draw and there's meditative components, but one could draw rather compulsively, could be almost like frenetic and feverish, but I don't think one can meditate quite like that. They're seeking different ends, but yeah, I mean, the generative is that, that recursive thing is clear to me. And I always say, like, that's how I believe I found God again, is through creating, because it became so, I don't know, it became pressing, the issue that, like, there was something mysterious about the process, something outside of just, like, industrial production. Like, I'm not just a factory that has inputs and outputs, where I don't buy that. That is just, like, influences being recycled into this is the art. I don't, or psychological remixing, or kind of like, that seems empty. It doesn't seem like the, there's something missing. And I guess what's missing is that interaction with the upper transcendent realm that you briefly get to kiss while making, which, I mean, honestly, you probably interact with it like, 1 out of 10, no, probably even less, you know, it's like, it's almost like you're just trying to get back there for as brief of a moment as you can. And then the rest is just technical, like, and hard work. And then hopefully you get there again. I don't know if you relate to that.
I think that, I think I try to get in that headspace as much as possible, but I feel that, you know, one of the things about art making in terms of where it lies, you know, the zone of art making, that, like, where it lies on this spectrum of spiritual or religious kind of feeling, is kind of, you know, what always strikes me about art making. And one of the things I liked about teaching, and, like, throwing it back to teaching for a second as a way to, like, shed light on this, was, you know, and sometimes I would just have to point it out during critiques, like group critiques with other faculty. Like, I felt like my role in group critiques with, like, tenured full-time faculty was to just, like, shake it up a little or something. Cause I felt like people would get so technical with their, like, responses to students, and just like, oh, you really should consider, you know, like, have you tried glazing? Like, if you glaze, you can knock this color back, really, you know, like, kind of dry technical speech. And I would just, like, try to, I felt like my shtick was, I'd always bring it back to the weirdness of the fact that we are actually spending our time making these things in the first place. And that the thing you're making, it's as if it's trying to tell you something, and your job to make it better is to listen to it better somehow. You know, there's, like, something in it that you're making it, but it's like there's something else in it that's trying to be made somehow incidentally or something, and you have to, like, listen to the incidental thing as much as, like, what you, or more than what you think you're trying to do with the work. And so there's something about that that's, like, that's, like, mediumistic kind of quality, where we think we're making a painting of a guy riding a horse or something, but the thing that's really happening is, who knows, like, something else that maybe is apparent to a viewer or a critic or something like that, or a friend or something. But I think there's something there about that. Just the fact that it's not a pre-made thing. It's like something we are making, and we have these kind of open rules for how we make it, and that we're, like, communing through it somehow to try to coax something out of the matter, the materials. There's, it's a very, you know, I feel like there's like some fundamental things about art making that often aren't really dwelt upon because maybe they can be too esoteric or too annoyingly challenging to try to like dwell on, or there's no answer to them, so people just skip past them. But I feel like it's good to keep tabs on those, because I think there's something about those things that are at the heart of this kind of spiritual connection with the work, that this kind of mediumistic quality that the thing is trying to tell me something is very weird.
Well, yeah, I think it's not focused on because it can't be commodified by the university. Like in a sense, if I can't technically render something down so that I can teach you a formula, then what am I teaching you? And why are you paying $40K? You know, like if it's about a spiritual connection, and if you just don't have interest in that, or you don't have a soul, I don't know. I'm not convinced. But also it's horrifying, right? So like, well, the truth is, life, we forget this all the time, is horrifying and mysterious. And see, that's the thing I felt I interacted with drawing is like, and it's a Jungian notion that the idea would use you in a sense, you know, and it needs to come out. And I like that because you see artists waste away at the service of an idea, and it's not because they're trying to make money. It's it's some very strange thing at play. And to me, it's very clear reality is participatory, and so is art making. And so, you know, it comes, it's like, how do you learn to speak to the, I mean, I think that should be taught. I think it can be taught in some ways, but how do you learn to speak to the idea and let it speak back, as opposed to like, well, catching it, branding it, commodifying it, and see how many years you can get out of it on the market, which is what the game is, right? Because then there's the credential behind it. And yeah, I mean, it's true of a lot of things. I don't think it's just art, this problem. I think the analysis of art is the same thing, right? Like, people are largely art illiterate, even artists who make it at this point, and thus they will reduce it to psychological, moralistic, or propagandistic or political metrics, and simply say the most base things they can say as to whether it's good or bad. Well, I like this movie because it reaffirmed my political perspective, or I like this movie because it was made by someone with this identity. These are like, these might be, you know, aspects of art making and art, but they're far from the most important. 100%. I mean, I can say that with all certainty. As the person making, it's just those things don't matter. And it's partially what concerns me about the kind of sensorial and self-sensorial nature of, you know, this age, where it's like, there's an eye on everything. Even one's own eye is on it when making. And it isn't clear to what degree social media, you know, plays a part in that. But there is something really romantic to me about, even you're talking about your grandma just making things as a as she did, or having a gallery that's unseen. That's, yeah, there's something very pure.
I think at the heart of art making, there is that kind of purity there. I feel like there's I was often, you know, the last semester I taught was 2019, the spring of 2019, and I wouldn't say there were more students that semester doing this, but kind of a little bit, like they were more focused on making something that looked really, I don't want to say finished necessarily, but sometimes just something that looked like it would look cool on a social media post, you know, it would look cool on Instagram, even though, you know, like they were like very protective of, you know, they would have this like ink splash on it, but then like, they had to like mask off all the edges so that it like kind of fit perfect, like that they seem to have this kind of like notion of this like perfect thing that would, I was noticing some of that like influence of the social media art kind of context in some of those students' work that last semester. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. It just looked like they were, you know, they're too young to be getting so uptight and precious about their work. Like art school should be precious about your work. It should be the time you're the most like experimental and freestyle and just all over the place, experimental, and not so like, this is my identity as an artist and this is what I make. And it always looks like that, you know, I just was noticing some of that kind of like negative, I think kind of it could be a negative influence of social media and artists on social media having like a consistent, repeatable kind of, or not just on social media, but the art world in general, it's kind of expected. It seems like that most artists have like a very consistent, repeatable kind of like formula that
sure.
are always kind of hitting at. So it was weird to see that just with like young kids who I think of young kids as being, you know, they should be the opposite of that.
Yeah, they should be. But I think there's a reality that, I don't know if this is the correct assessment, but it seems to me once the fashion world and the art world kind of were crossbred, there was this demand for like sexiness out of artists. Mm-hmm. And so there's a time horizon. It's almost like athletics. Like if you want to be, you better be sexy when you're making that work in your 25 to 30 range. Mm-hmm. Then maybe maybe later on, I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's definitely a youth fixation. So it makes sense to me that the artist might be more aware. It's mm-hmm. so mind blowing that there were painters that, you know, your life was like, well, I'm just making paintings. There's probably a war going on. I probably have a family. There's, you know, I have a disease. And then when I'm 80, oh, look at that. I got a show at the, you know, the Guggenheim. Mm-hmm. And now I die. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's such a different incentive structure and such a closer proximity to life, to lived life. And it's, you know, it's always shocking to look at the back timeline of art books. And it's, again, it's like, well, he got tuberculosis when he was 10 to 15. And then he went to war from 18 to 20. And then, you know, entered the school. And then it's like, yeah, there was so much life in there. And then they made the paintings, right. And probably out of a real necessity, like a very much like, wow, I need to process all of that life that just happened to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think part of I think having a kid was that my and I think moving here to San Francisco, my specific life has been coming back into some of my newer pieces in a way that's like I haven't done in quite a while, where it's very specific to my life. And the actually the city of San Francisco is like featuring in the background in some of the pieces in a weird way that is like, I don't usually like, you know, have like a specific location or whatnot in the works, but I think like it's helping, I think it's coming back in because it's helping me process some of what's going on and like the changes. And it's definitely, it's like, you know, an upheaval to move across the country and the setup, you know, 6 months leading up to that and the kind of now we're like 6 months after that. But yeah, I think processing, I think art, you know, outside of the kind of more kind of spiritual like stuff we were talking about, I think on a more like psychological level is just like something we can do to kind of like in an open-ended way, like process our environment and our circumstances.
It seems to me that children can force a certain kind of humanization out of you. So like, it makes sense to me that you would be pulled out of abstraction into more grounded depictions, you know, like what, like outside of a floating symbol, maybe now it's in the place you're from or And I think that's can be good, of course. I understand that as well, like the personal kind of emerging more and more later in your 30s, as opposed to kind of leaning heavy into abstraction. And I don't mean abstract depictions.
Right. Yeah, I think it's also the, you know, the when we came out to San Francisco basically every year for the last 10 years or so, because we would fly into San Francisco to go visit my in-laws in, who live in San Luis Obispo, which is like 4 hours south of here. And every time we came out from the East Coast, especially we would do it, you know, at Thanksgiving. So it was always like really cold back home and stuff. And it just, I just felt like I was like feasting my eyes on the colors and forms and textures out here. And now that we live here, I feel like I'm getting to do that all the time.
Sure.
And it's just a really, you know, beautiful place. And the houses, I don't know if I want to use the term like feminine, but it's like there's a kind of like, I don't know if it's a Mexican influence or something, but the architecture here of a lot of the houses, there's just much more like curvilinear aspects and these kind of like decorative flourishes to the, you know, like little, you know, we live in just like a one story, it's like a one story house with a garage underneath. Our, most of our neighborhood is kind of the same kind of setup. And each house is like a different color, like seafoam and like orange and like all these weird, there's a house down the street from us that's like, I would describe the color as like a dusty purple kind of color with like a orange, kind of like a desaturated orange trim. And then there's like a green part of it. It's just like a this hodgepodge of like weird colors that actually look really good next to each other. So anyways, there's I think it's both like processing your environment and also like living in this place where I feel like visually it's very stimulating to me as like an artist and like always kind of giving me new ideas for, you know, color and texture and form and whatnot.
Yeah. I think there's more of an expressiveness out there. I do wonder, I think it might be a Mexican influence. It also is just the time it was built. It was built such a, you know, it's a very different time period than New York.
Yeah.
But do you feel like more of a human after having a child?
More of a human. Well, I'll explain it with an anecdote, which is that we have a dog who is, you might have heard snoring in the background here. But she's like 10 now. But when we got her, my wife said, you know, one night when snuggling with our dog, she said, do you think we'll ever love anything as much as we love our dog? Mm-hmm. Name is Judy. She said, maybe we'd had some drinks and we're out and about on the town, you know, so maybe this wasn't a fully sober comment, but she said, do you think we'll ever love anything as much as Judy? And at the time it was like kind of a valid question. It seemed like a valid question. But now, unfortunately, Judy is kind of like, she's gone from like this like amazing dog that we loved to like somewhere between a hamster and
an inconvenience.
Yeah, right. She's great. She's got her own issues, but like, you know, it's interesting when you, there's sometimes that we have this inherent like love we're willing to like shower on another like life form or project or organization or, you know, whatever it happens to be like, but I think we have like the inherent thing to like shower, like we're kind of programmed to like if we have kids, there's this thing that kicks in that's kind of like, oh, that's what these feelings are really geared towards. And I feel that love that I felt for my dog, which I still love my dog. I'm not like I'm not a bad person, but that love, that specific love I felt for our dog before has just gone like channeled directly into our, you know, everything that we do for our daughter. And it feels more right to me. But I think some people don't go down that path, and that's perfectly fine too. And I think that, but I do think we put it into something, whether or not we put it into a child, or we have some kind of like cause we're really dedicated to or something. I feel like it has to go towards like something that it's just like in there, in maybe not in everybody, but I feel like it's largely a part of being human, is that kind of like helping others and
Is there any way in which you feel that about the art making versus the child rearing, that like, I'm gonna suspect no on this, that because like your love of art versus your love of your dog is a different we'll call it a slot. So I'm assuming as your love for your daughter increased, your love for art did not decrease like it did in the anecdote about the dog.
Right.
Was that true?
Yes. Yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah. The that has been that has stayed like the same consistent level it's art is just something I need to do. It's something that's very ingrained. It's something that I will make time for no matter what. So yeah, that's like why my current schedule is the way that it is. I would prefer not to be getting up at 3:30, but it's how it is right now. And I'm doing it because I need to care for my daughter, but I need to have time for art, or else I will, I don't know. I just feel like a better person when I'm making art. I feel less like stressed out, and it's part of, it's like an art therapy kind of thing, but I think it's more than that. And it's something that I will find a way to make time for it. And I'm thinking of times that like my daughter has woken up like especially early on mornings when I'm still down there working, and my thought is not full disclosure, my thought is not like, oh, here's my daughter, I'd love to take care of her right now. You know, my thought is, are you sure you don't want to go back to bed? I'm kind of making art. give me 20 more minutes here. So I think, that has stayed like I'm worried I'm going to sound like an asshole now.
No.
Basically,
no.
I don't, being honest. I don't love my dog, and
yeah, you hate your dog.
I think
one day you'll love to wake up at 3:30 to make the art.
Yeah,
it sounds cool from here, you know.
I like
a good night of rest though. So
yeah, well, I got this like weird chunky wristwatch, like a Casio that vibrates, and I got it so that it could vibrate and it would wake me up without like an alarm waking my wife up also. I just tuned it out. Like I don't feel it when it vibrates. Like it's just like, but I somehow, like to my surprise, have just like, I'll just like wake up at 3:30. And sometimes when there's like, it doesn't seem like I'm going to wake up at 3:30. There'll be like a weird noise somewhere. Like my dog will snore really loud. I feel like there'll often be a noise at 3:30 that wakes me up anyway. So I just like kind of get up and sneak out of bed and do my thing. But I have like a garage space under our house, and I use like half of the garage for the art studio space, which is like way more space than I had in New York.
Yeah. And I recall your studio. I also recall your dog. I think it was in a crate. I think you had cats too. I don't know.
We had two cats, but they both died. Yeah. They both died. Those two cats. I was working before we started this today on finishing up like a cover letter for a grant to try to get funding to do a studio space here in San Francisco for a year, like at a studio building.
Nice.
So I'd like to kind of like kick it up a notch. I have a doing like a show with like a new gallery in Los Angeles next month. The gallery is called the Trophy Room.
And when is that?
That would be like March 4th, something like that.
I actually will. I'll be in LA on March 4th.
Well, it's
not real. You're lying.
It's a virtual show.
You're lying.
It's a virtual show. He has a physical space. He just got all of his paperwork through the state to like have this up and running and stuff. But he's doing the first like two or three things like virtual before he eases into physical shows. But he has like a kind of a separate space he's like imagining as like maybe a
I refuse to show
residency.
Virtual residency?
A virtual, no, a real
metaverse.
yeah, you don't have legs in there. You're just kind of hovering in the space, and people have legs in the metaverse. I thought this was like a controversy. Like everyone was complaining. They seems like that could be very problematic on multiple levels.
Not having legs.
Complaining that you need legs. I don't know. Either way, it seems like somebody could
get upset. Anything could be at this point, but yeah. I'm trying to hold off on entering that for as long as I can.
So I got that coming up. There's been kind of like a, I think because I've been very like consistent with like finishing work and posting work and whatnot, there's been like a kind of I've noticed a little more like interest in people I don't, you know, either people I don't know or people I haven't talked to in a while, kind of like reaching out. And so I think I'm feeling positive about, you know, being here and in San Francisco and like what opportunities might come about from being here. I'm actually, speaking of Mark Zuckerberg, I met up with a guy named Ryan De La Hose. I don't know if you know.
Oh, I know
that guy. You know, right? Do you?
I know him in the sense that, like, when I was in the Bay, he was like, for some reason, he was just everywhere. And much respect. I didn't even realize he was still making work.
Yeah, he's here, and he's been running on a contract basis, I think. That I think runs out in a couple months. He's got this like lab at the old Menlo Park, like Facebook headquarters campus. And in the lab, they have like Rhizo machines and silkscreen. And like he runs a lab called the Analog, I think it's called the Analog Research Lab. And
the man never quit. That's the impression I got. He just kept making stuff. And it looks like, I'm checking it out right now, it looks like he's still doing his thing.
Yeah. We actually met up yesterday, and he was like telling me about this lab kind of just like on the fly. And he's like, you should come in, do some like Rhizo,
whatever you like, because I don't know.
Okay,
I'm gonna say Rhizo.
I think it is Rhizo.
That's what I'm gonna say. It's never been settled.
Yeah, it's kind of like GIF versus GIF.
Well, I think that's settled, but no one is going to say what they want you to say. I think if we ask a Japanese person how they pronounce it, that would be the actual way to pronounce a risograph, because it's a Japanese machine, I believe.
Rizo. Yeah.
Yeah, he had Cool Try. That's what cool he did try, back in cool the day. Try. That's cool.
Yeah. But he's going to, I think I'm going to go in on Thursday and do my first like Rhizo.
You've never done that. It suits the work very well. The texture, nature.
That's what he was saying. He was like, come in, like one day you can like crank out an addition. Yeah. So I'm going to just going to flow with it here. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know what I need to end the podcast?
Yeah. What do you need? Are we going to come up with a
joke
song on the fly? Oh, a joke.
No, I mean, I think 90% of the podcast,
what's the joke?
I ask you for the joke. What do you got?
Oh my God. Joke. Let's see. Do I have a joke?
Are you a jokester?
I'm not really like a jokester person. I, Jeez.
I know it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I don't really do the, you know, like the here's my joke thing. But, gosh.
What about, so what's, you have something funny that happened to
funny.
You?
Funny, something funny that happened to me. Yeah, let's see here.
What a tough spot. It's a tough spot to put someone in.
Oh, let's see.
But tell me like some damn...
You want something really sad?
Eckhart Tolle. Does he tell jokes?
Oh, man. Oh, you know, I feel like he does tell something. I feel like he's one of those people that's really dry. So when he says something that's remotely funny, it sounds like really funny because you're just like not expecting it. There was like one of his talks where he was saying, somebody asked him like, how can we like practice mindfulness when, you know, our phones are always, you know, going off and blah, blah, blah. Like, how do we maintain like a good relationship with like technology or something like that? And he like had this like very dry, like answer that he started saying back to the guy. And he said something like, you can start by turning off your push notifications.
Wow.
Which was like a weird response from him. It was just like a straightforward technical suggestion.
Yeah, that's funny. I'll take that. That's a horrible. That's horrible. He shouldn't even say words like push notifications. He tells you like, yeah, go into general settings, push notifications.
Yeah. Do you know much about that guy?
He's like a slow turtle that I like. I've always liked turtles since I was very young. And I love his voice and his cadence, but I don't know, man. You know, the pain body.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yeah. You should go to one of his things and like just
I'd love to hang out with him.
Just say that. Yeah.
I'd love to hang out with him.
I wonder, like, if that guy like drives a car, does he have like some unexpected bumper stickers on it, or like, you know,
that's what you wonder.
Yeah, like if you saw him, if you looked over and you're driving, you're mm-hmm. like, oh wow, it's Eckhart Tolle, and you would be like surprised that he drives like a Scion Cube or something like that. You'd be like, oh really? Like, you know, just like something you would kind of like judge him about.
Yeah, there's no escaping the aesthetic bankruptcy of modernity. It's just impossible.
Did you listen to the new Kendrick Lamar where like Eckhart Tolle like features prominently on? It's very surprising. When I first heard that, I was like, wow, this is like a wild fusion going on here.
I like that album. I listened to it once, probably never listened to it again. I thought that his choice of sampling Eckhart Tolle mm-hmm. is like a pretty bad idea. Mm. And like maybe he didn't know it was cheesy in some mm-hmm, way, mm-hmm, but maybe he's just like new to the new age thing. And mm-hmm. he was like, wow, this is fucking profound.
Mm-hmm,
but mm-hmm. yeah, I don't judge him for it. It's just like, I can't imagine anyone else doing it and even getting away with it. But I feel like he did get away with it.
Yeah. 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 I wonder if it's like brought Eckhart Tolle like a whole new kind of like interest, or like
must not.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right, that's no problem. You have no joke.
I don't like humor.
yeah, that's
as soon as we end this, I'm gonna think.
Hey, you know what? What book are you reading right now? I've never asked.
Oh my god.
I hope you're caught on something embarrassing.
No, I like ever since the one thing that's definitely fallen away since having my daughter is reading. I haven't had the time to do much of it. If there's something, it's like audiobook, but it's not the same. And mm-hmm. yeah, I that used to be a very fair question. And I think at some point I have many books on my shelf that it's kind of like, they're just kind of paused right now, but yeah. See, I'm disappointing you on that one too.
What's the last audiobook? Are you even listening to audiobooks? You're not. You're having virtual shows.
Not reading real books. I don't love my dog.
This is what the people yearn for.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. I'm liking the work. It's looking good.
Thanks. Thank you. Do you have anything coming up on the horizon here? In your world?
I am the horizon.
You are the horizon. Damn.
Oh gee, I can't even explain my life. It's yeah. I don't even have a kid, but it's I do have a just it's incredibly hectic. Like we don't have to get into it right now, but okay. To keep it short, fabrication company that does art fabrication, and then just like, you know, Whole Foods shit and furniture building, art director of a 100-year-old art center and theater. Tonight I'm screening Tarkovsky's The Sacrifice, which I'll probably fall asleep during. That starts at 8. And then
screening, yeah.
Ponyo on Sunday, comedy show tomorrow.
Wow.
Improv on Monday. It's just wow. I need to tone it down a little. But this is the 30s for me is like I'm giving a shot at the social human sphere, see what I can do. And then, you know, I look forward to retreating in my like 50s, 60s, but I just feel that you're called to do certain things at certain ages. And if you don't, you know, you shouldn't be like 50 and have the problems of a teenager, you know, like your problems should change over time. That's kind of been my metric of maturity.
Right.
And obviously like you have a whole different set of concerns when you have a child. But yeah, I just feel like there's something distasteful about, I don't want to hear like 30-year-olds from Brooklyn talking about their life like they're in high school, like waiting to hear someone text them back. I don't give a shit, you know? Or, you know, it's just like, again,
Wait. Are you doing your improv bit right now?
No, I'm not participating in any of these things. I'm just hosting.
Eckhart Tolle, that guy sucks. You guys with me?
Yeah, no, I'm just a host.
This thing on.
We did just have an open mic where like 2 60-year-olds were up there for like the first time doing comedy, and I love that.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
I didn't think I would love the open mic format, but I actually do. But I will let you go. I know you have like a real life. Your time is now precious. You know, people respect you when you have children because it's like, wow, I'm taking away this guy's time right now. You know, that's a big thing.
It's real.
It's very real.
Well,
but very good talking.
Good talking to you too. Thanks for taking the time to do it. Yeah.
We'll meet again one day.
We will. Yeah. Are you going to be back out in the Bay Area anytime?
No. But I look forward to seeing the Risographs. I think that's a great pair. Great match. Cut them up. You know. Collage them. Have fun.
My intention is come back out to the New York, Philadelphia, Northeast area when the next time I have a show that's kind of like I should go out for that. You know, that's my goal. That's my encouragement to go back out.
Sounds good.
That's my excuse to go back out. Yeah.
All right. I look forward to
it. Well, good talking to you. And talk to you next time.
Yeah. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. Music by Dori Bavarsky and Mingja Chin. Next up, we have Mike Haldeman. Christopher Davidson. Christopher Davidson. Christopher Davidson. Christopher Davidson. Christopher Davidson.